Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Let me ask you this, parents. Do you believe that your children should be given a zone of privacy that you will not invade? That's an interesting argument, and modern technologies that are just now available on the market have raised that old question to a very contemporary status. Let me tell you right now, there are GPS systems that will track your child. There are internet systems that will track where he's been on the internet. And there are all kinds of ways to now get right into the lives of our children by the means of these technologies. And, of course, there are the old issues. Is the room his room, her room, or is it your room? What about mail? What about phone calls? What about all the rest? You know, there are some who believe that children should be treated just like any other citizen and should be granted a zone of privacy. The ACLU and other groups are up in arms about some of these technologies. And there are a lot of parenting experts, you know, the parenting expert industry out there, who are saying that parents just need to give their kids space. I want to know what you think about this. I think this is the time for some intelligent Christian conversation among Christian parents and those who are parents, have parents, will be parents, and might be parents, to talk about whether or not this is something we should respect, a zone of privacy for our kids. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. And after a review of the news, we'll be right back to it. News coming out of Toronto, Canada, is that an Air France jet, a 737 with 200 passengers, has gone off the runway in an attempt to land at the Toronto airport. At present, there are no reports on whether there are any casualties or anything. Right now, it's some pretty dramatic video coming out of Toronto. But we're going to have to await a news conference later this hour before we're going to know anything of substance to report about that. In the meantime, what do we know? Well, let's pray for those folks right now. Let's just make certain that we're praying that that the loss of life will be limited. And it's just a reminder to us of the fragility of human life and the reality that these modern technologies we come to know and to trust, well, they sometimes fail, along with those who run them. We'll be watching this story with you. In the meantime, there is plenty of news to report over the last couple of days. Big things happening. On Monday, California's Supreme Court ruled that country clubs must offer gay members who register as domestic partners the same discounts given to married couples, a decision that could apply to other businesses like insurance companies, mortgage lenders, social clubs, and all the rest. The California Supreme Court dealt with a case that had to do with the Bernardo Heights Country Club in San Diego. Birgit Kolbke, an avid golfer, she pays her $500 a month in membership fees. She challenged the policy because she wanted her longtime lesbian partner to be treated just like a spouse, able to use the club, able to play golf regularly with her. And the Supreme Court of California granted them their wish. Now, you look at this, and, you know, here's the deal. Decisions like this begin to come together in a pattern of major cultural revolution. Decisions like this come down, and here you have another activist court simply ruling on this as if there's now a constitutional right to be forced to have your domestic partnership recognized by a private club. I mean, that's what we're talking about here, is a private club, a country club. Now, this issue is just another little fuse on the big bomb of the war over marriage and what marriage really is. And, folks, it's just something else to watch because the state of California is not just one out of 50. California is the most populous state, and its activist judiciary becomes an engine for influencing the courts in other states and also national public opinion and national courts as well. So we will track that with you. What in the world do we call the war on terror? That's an interesting and new topic of debate because in Washington they are trying to rename the war. Right now the White House is trying to talk not about the war on terror, but the struggle against global extremism. And they've come up with an acronym called SAVE, which is a different set of words, but this struggle against extremism or violence and extremism is something that's very interesting, isn't it? Now, I don't particularly like that nomenclature, and I'll tell you why. It's because the word extremist doesn't mean anything without an object to the extremity. That is, what does extremism mean? Extremism in the name of what? An extreme version of what kind of ideology or what kind of idea? I think I prefer what Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld now calls the war on terror. He calls it, and I quote, a global struggle against the enemies of freedom, the enemies of civilization. Now, I think that's right. That's what we're up against. The enemies of civilization. It's not just extremism. You know, there are extremists for cheese. There are extremists for all kinds of things. They have nothing to do with the war on terror, nothing to do with 9/11, nothing to do with the real challenge our civilization faces. It's not just extremism. It is those who are the enemies of freedom and the enemies of civilization. And that last part is probably most important, the enemies of civilization, because civilization is a social compact. It requires trust. You can't sleep at night in a civilization. You can't have a civilization if you're afraid that your next-door neighbors are going to try to burn your house down. That kind of trust is exactly what is under attack by those who are the agents of terror. Well, we'll see what happens. Let me tell you that neither the White House nor the government nor the military, really none of us has much control over what kind of nomenclature gets used in the public square, because once an idea gets fixed, once it's labeled, it's pretty hard to overcome it. But we'll see what happens as we track this together. President George W. Bush in the Washington area on Sunday night spoke to a gathering of 30,000 Boy Scouts. Now, the 2005 National Boy Scout Jamboree has been the scene of some tragedy already this year. You had four adults electrocuted, adult scout leaders electrocuted in an awful accident. And then this incredible heat wave that has spread throughout most of the nation, especially on the East Coast, afflicted the boys for the Jamboree. 300 scouts were sent to the sick bay, and some of them were sent home. So by the time the president got there on Sunday night, his visit having been delayed by some of these other tragic developments, the boys were really ready to hear the president of the United States. The president's address was brief, but ladies and gentlemen, it was genuinely important. I want to read to you two paragraphs from what the president had to say. He said, "At times, you may come across people who say that moral truth is relative or call a religious faith a comforting illusion. They may question the values you learn in scouting, but remember, lives of purpose are constructed on the conviction there is right and there is wrong, and we can know the difference. In the years ahead, you will find that indifferent or cynical people accomplish little that makes them proud. You'll find that confronting injustice and evil requires a vision of goodness and truth. You'll find that many in your community, especially those younger than you, look to you as an example of conduct and leadership. For your sake, and for the sake of your country, our country, I hope you'll always strive to be men of conviction and character." Now, that's just a little bit of what the president had to say on Sunday night, but I want us to think about this for just a moment. You know, as a student of American history and of the American presidency, I have to tell you that the words that came out of George W. Bush, our president, on Sunday night are words that could easily be imagined coming from Teddy, from Theodore Roosevelt. And, of course, he was president almost exactly a century before. This is the kind of language of moral conviction and of character of which Teddy Roosevelt was justifiably well known. And now President George W. Bush has said something very similar. I think these words are very important. You're talking to 30,000 boys between the ages of 13 and 15. And here was a president who, without apology, spoke about moral courage, spoke about character, and actually said there are going to be some who will tell you that moral truth is relative. Don't believe it. There is a right and a wrong, and we can know the difference. That is bold language. You know, there are those in this cynical age who would dismiss what the president had to say. Well, you can know. The cultural elites will say it's anachronistic, simplistic, and moralistic. Well, it's right. You know, the Boy Scout still represents something noble and proud. And I speak as one who was a Boy Scout, and as one former Boy Scout, I am proud of the president for being there, and I'm proud of what he had to say. And as a father, and as a former boy myself, I am convinced that this is exactly the kind of message young men need to hear from the President of the United States. I hope you'll always strive to be men of conviction and character. Who could be against that? Well, just listen to some who would respond to the President's speech. Folks, there is so much going on in the world, and we as Christians have the responsibility to watch it carefully. And one of the things we now note, not only in the war on terror, but in larger developments, is the increasing distance between the United States and Western Europe when it comes to matters of Christian faith, or just even religious reference at all. Historian Niall Ferguson of Harvard University doesn't believe in God, but he does want others to believe. If that sounds odd, it's because Ferguson, who's usually a very insightful thinker, believes that the collapse of belief in Europe threatens to undermine European civilization. Speaking of Britain himself, this is his native land, he said, "Why have the British lost their historic faith? Like so many difficult questions, this seems at first sight to have an easy answer. But," he goes on to say, "to be frank, I have no idea what the answer is, but I do know that it matters." Now, this is interesting. Here you have an historian who says of himself that he doesn't believe in God, who's come to the conclusion, and remember, this is someone who teaches at Harvard University, that belief in God is absolutely necessary for civilization. He doesn't believe in God, but he sure hopes that others will, and others do. An interesting concept, isn't it? It may be just a functional understanding of why belief in God matters, but it's something in itself that a professor at Harvard University put it in print. We'll be back to talk about whether our kids should enjoy a zone of privacy. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. A zone of privacy? You know, I got to be honest, I don't think my parents had such a concept. I know my dad didn't. Basically, anything going on in your life is my business. Anything going on in your room is my business. There wasn't any zone of privacy. But with modern technology, you know, there are all kinds of new things. Of course, there are new dangers out there, new opportunities. But there are also some new ways to track your children. Sometimes, literally, with technology, there is the drive cam. It's a 24/7 video that can be put inside your kid's car, so that at any given moment you can pull up on your screen, on your internet screen, a picture of what they're seeing as they're driving along. And it'll give you stuff like the speed readout and all the rest. And with a global positioning system, a GPS, it can tell you exactly where they are. You can pinpoint it. You can follow them on your screen. There are also other forms of GPS vehicle tracking, and there is tracking through cell phones. That is the actual physical tracking of where the kid is, depending on the relative location near a cell phone tower. And you can pay some of the cellular phone services an extra amount in order to have this kind of service added to your system. There's AutoWatch. This is like a black box. You know those black boxes that are on planes that tell you exactly what was going on? Well, these are now available for cars, so that when Junior uses the car, you can go out and get a little readout of how fast he was going and whether he was cornering too tightly and, et cetera, all kinds of interesting things. Schools. Some schools are beginning to use ID tags that include radio signals so that they know where the kids are and where you presumably could know, too. There's something known as a tracking leash. Now, it's not an actual leash, but instead it's electronic so that you can follow where a kid is and know what's going on. Now, then there are the old technologies, like diaries. There are old means of communication, like mail. And then there is that ancient device known as the telephone. You know, there are some people who say that that parents have no right to monitor a telephone conversation. That actually became a very interesting issue in a court case where a parent had heard a confession of a criminal act on a conversation going on between her daughter and her daughter's boyfriend. House thrown out of court because it was said that the parent had no right to overhear it. And then, of course, there's also the room. Is the kid's room his kingdom? Well, that's the old principle of British law. A man's house is his kingdom. But you know what? It was the man who owned the house whose kingdom it was, not his kids. And again, do you assume that the kid's room is just their territory and do whatever, boy, girl? And then, of course, there's the internet. Now, let me just tell you, you've heard me hit this refrain so many times on this program. If you as a parent do not have an internet tracking system on your computer and you've got kids who are on the internet and you don't know where they've been, then shame on you. You're failing as a parent. I'll just tell you that. But there are all kinds of technologies. You can use stealth technologies and visible technologies to track things and to filter things on the internet. Well, is this right? You know, the ACLU and others have begun raising issues saying that this is a violation of the kids' right to privacy. Do children have a right to privacy? Young children, older children, school-age children, teenage children? I want to know what you think. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Steve calling from Montgomery, Alabama, listening on XM Satellite Radio. Go right ahead, Steve.
Hey, Albert. Yeah, I was just telling your call screener that democracy stops at the wife and I's front door, that we've determined that we've got a responsibility to be our child's parents, not our best friend.
Well, I like that. Democracy stops at my front door, you know, and it's not up for a vote. Steve, tell me about the ages of your kids.
Well, right now we've just got a four-year-old little girl, so it's still relatively new to us. But both of us thankfully come from a good Christian background with our parents, and that's just the way it was. When it came to the bedroom, they knocked once and came in.
Yeah, they knocked on the way in, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
They knocked and the door was opened right after that.
Yeah. I remember those days. Now, let me ask you this. Your daughter's right now four. That's great. That's precious. And she's with you or your wife, you know, or where you know where she is virtually all the time. Let's fast forward 10 years. She's 14. Would you want to know where she is all the time, or do you think that's her business?
No, I believe that we would be derelict in our duties as a parent if we did not know where she was at all times.
Yeah. Well, God bless you, Steve.
Yeah, it's just a responsibility I think we all have, and I think that's what's been a big problem with what's happened to this country over the last quarter of a century is that it's pretty much anything goes.
Yeah, and I think this whole idea of a zone of privacy, you know, it comes right out of the kind of cultural discourse we have, whether it goes back to the Griswold case with birth control, where the Supreme Court just came up with a right to privacy for adults, and, of course, that led to Roe v. Wade, 1973, and all the rest. This right to privacy is so deeply ingrained now in the contemporary American psyche that we're insanely, I think, extending this to our kids. And I'm frightened when I listen to some parents talk about this. You know, and I'm being serious here. I've had parents say, look, I wouldn't invade my child's privacy. I would not go into his room. I wouldn't. I trust my child. Now, that's an interesting concept, too. What does that kind of trust mean? You know, is it a well-placed trust? Or is it a dangerous trust? Dangerous for both the parent and the child. Let's go to Virginia. She's calling from Maple Shade, New Jersey. Virginia, welcome to the Albert Mueller Program.
Hi.
What do you think of all this?
Well, my six-year-old daughter can tell you exactly what I think about it. She always says, yes, Mommy, I know. I have no privacy until I pay rent. Because she's been trained to say that.
Well, it sounds like that she's got it down. What does that mean in your family, though? I mean, how does that operate?
Well, I believe that, you know, I look at it as somewhat of a business transaction between the Lord and myself, or like a project. You know, your job, you're assigned a project to do, and you're expected to follow through with that in the manner that your, you know, manager or superiors have provided for you to do so. The Lord has placed, you know, our children in his children in our care. They don't belong to us. They belong to him. And it is up to us to raise our children in the manner that he has prescribed for us in his word. And I am expected to both myself and my husband to stand before God and give an account for how we have raised his gifts that he's provided to us. I don't want to stand before him and say, oh, well, you know, I wanted to give her privacy, and that's why she ended up going in the wrong way. To me, it doesn't make any sense. Neither I nor my husband are interested in what popular culture dictates for us in terms of our children. We're going to raise our children according to what the Lord has prescribed for us to do so. And privacy does not fit into that picture.
Well, God bless you, Virginia. You know, I just wish you were a little clearer on the topic. No, in all honesty, that is extremely clear. You've really framed the issue. We are going to give an answer, of course, to God for how we raise our children. And, you know, ignorance is not bliss. That's the amazing thing. I've had parents who have said directly to me, I don't really even want to know what's going on there. Well, you know, that's a dereliction of duty. That's an abdication of responsibility. Let me be real clear about this. Just over the last few hours, I've received an email from a young man who had read something that I had written and wrote me saying that he's got a problem with pornography. And he wants to know what to do about it. And, well, I found out how young he was. He needs to go talk to his dad. I mean, he needs to go get help. But, you know, there are an awful lot of people who would say, well, that's just nobody's business. Well, I tell you what, his dad has already fallen down on the job by allowing this to happen and by not knowing it happened. So if I'm stepping on some toes here, no apologies. If you've got a teenager and he's got access to the Internet and you don't know if he has a problem or not, you've got a problem. Because it's our responsibility to make sure we know what's going on in the lives of our children. And it's a father's responsibility, a parent's responsibility to protect our children and then to hold them accountable. We're raising children to become adults. We can't treat children as if they are adults. It's a dangerous world out there, and there are a lot of people who don't want to face that. And sometimes it's a dangerous world right at home. Do you know that most kids who have premarital sex do so at home, either the boy or the girl's home? A lot of the most awful things that happen to kids happen at home, and parents just, well, they don't want to knock on the door. They don't want to find out what's going on in there. I want to find out what you think. The phone number, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. From Louisville, Kentucky, I'm Albert Mueller.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Well, welcome back. I think this is a worthwhile discussion, and I scheduled it for today because of some of these technological issues that have recently come to light, some media coverage, and the debate that has ensued. And I've been amazed at some of the things I have heard from parents saying, you know, I really would use this kind of technology or I wouldn't. And I guess what troubles me more than anything else is why some people say they wouldn't. As if children and teenagers should just automatically be granted this zone of privacy. Also, I've done so much work in issues like sex education, and you know what? An awful lot of the stuff from the left simply says to parents, you know, you must not invade your children's privacy on issues of sex, sexuality. You really have no right to know if your daughter's on the birth control pill. You really have no right to know if your son's carrying condoms in his pocket. You have no right to know what's going on in terms of their romantic life or anything else. And, of course, there are now laws that make this very complex. You know, when you talk about this zone of privacy, this is why issues like parental notification laws on abortion are so controversial. Issues like school-based health clinics where there are kids that can go in and get medical advice. And my understanding is that in many, many places, you know, older teenagers can get medical advice, even in some cases medical treatment, without any kind of knowledge, much less permission from parents. What kind of zone of privacy are we talking about here? I think the oldest issue for kids is probably the room. Then comes telephone, then comes diary, and I guess that's still something some kids are keeping, although in the weblog age, it makes you kind of wonder whether there's anyone actually putting pen to paper anymore. But then, of course, you have the internet, the car, and all the rest. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I'm going to go to Beth calling from New Albany, Indiana. Beth, what do you think?
Well, I have two children at home, a 13-year-old and a 16-year-old, and they don't have internet. They're not allowed to talk on the phone unless I know who they're talking to. They don't have privacy. I look at it like they're legally my responsibility financially, and if they were to go out and do something, I'd be responsible for it.
That's right. Let me ask you right away, Beth. Are we talking boys or girls here?
Two boys.
Okay, two boys. Their room, or is that your room they get to live in?
That's my room they get to live in.
Yeah.
And if they don't behave, then they'll have to pay me rent.
Well, you just be the mom there, Beth. God bless you. And that's what God made parents for, is to parent. And I like the directness in what you had to say, and I really appreciate your call. Let's go to Mike calling from Silver Bay, Minnesota. Listening on XM. Mike,
how you
got
doing
kids?
Now?
I'm doing great. What do you think about all this?
Well, I was just talking to your screen caller, and I have a 12-year-old and a 10-year-old, my daughter and my son, and there really isn't privacy in my home, and it's our home. Their rooms are our family's rooms, and if the door gets slammed, I take the doors off, because that's just the policy that we have, and there's a trust issue that's at stake, but until they're old enough to understand trust at an adult level, they don't really own anything, and I have a discussion with my son that it really drives him nuts, because lots of times he'll say, I want to buy this video game, I want to buy this CD with my money. And I say, your mom and I allowed you that money. You earned it, or you got it for your birthday, but we allowed you to have that. That's not your money. You just can't buy what you want with it. We police that, I guess police isn't a good word, but we respect that you have your money, but you just can't go and buy what you want with it.
Well, Mike, thanks for your call. I have to tell you, I think there'd be some people who could be overhearing this who would say, this is unbelievable. I can't even believe I'm hearing this. Not in the year 2005. Haven't you people read the U.S. Constitution? Haven't you been listening to the Supreme Court? Haven't you been watching Super Nanny or Nanny 9/11 or, you know, Crazy Nanny or whatever's the latest show out there giving parental advice? I mean, don't you know that you should just allow your kids to be treated as equal partners in this family thing? And don't you know that you should be giving them all the privacy that they might demand and all the rest? You know, we've heard a pretty consistent refrain, which I have found interesting. I know there have to be some folks out there who would hold to a contrary position. And, you know, they're the ones that are getting to frame the issue so much in the public square. But, you know, here's the interesting thing, isn't it? You know, we know it's a dangerous place. Increasingly, we're aware of that. All you have to do is watch the news channels or pick up the newspaper, even the briefest of glimpses at the media. will reveal just how dangerous it is. You got teenagers and children disappearing. You've got kids showing up on milk cartons and all the rest. And, you know, I think there's a basic parental instinct that is kicking in here. I think these who are developing the technologies know that what people say they believe about a zone of privacy may differ from what they do when they get worried about their own kids. You know, and I think we really have to be strategic about this. We need to be thoughtful and not just find ourselves solving a problem. We need to solve the problem before it develops. We need to prevent rather than just try to deal with the mess once it happens. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. The issue is a zone of privacy, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. You know, I think this is part of a bigger picture because, you know, there are parents who say, I don't think that I should try to dictate to my kids what they should believe. Well, I can't imagine a Christian parent saying that. What a trivialization of eternal spiritual realities. It's our responsibility to confront our children with biblical truth, to train them in biblical truth, to confront them with the gospel, to encourage them to come to Christ. And it's our job as parents to be right in the thick of their lives. And this idea of a zone of privacy, I think it's an insidious and dangerous modern development, and even though it is being promoted and fostered out there by the psychotherapeutic community and by those who are the self-proclaimed advocates for children and children's rights, I think we as parents know better. This is a dangerous world. It always has been, but there are new dangers with the Internet, new technologies, and all the rest. And I think we just have to be very, very watchful, and we have to especially watch the ideologies that really threaten the integrity of the family. Let's go to Tanya. She's calling from Cleveland, Ohio, listening on WHKW. Tanya, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call. So what I really wanted to say is I hear a lot of people laying down the law, and in theory, I really agree that privacy is something that really needs to be, you have full access as parents in children's lives. But what I don't hear is just how you protect your children with that information, and that's the point that I wanted to address. It's just that a lot of times, these are sensitive topics, and they're things that parents use to embarrass their children or are said publicly. And I really think that something needs to be said about keeping your kids safe and that kids feel safe in their own home and sharing these kind of, you know, sensitivities.
Yeah. You know, Tanya, I think that's a really essential word. I appreciate you making that call. I think we as parents, as much as we have the responsibility to watch over our children and get right into the thick of their lives, we also have the responsibility to treat them with integrity. And there's a difference between backing off and saying that integrity means you respect a zone of privacy, which I believe is just false, and saying that integrity means that we deal with our children in love and respect with integrity, with whatever information we find. It shouldn't be used, I agree, to tease or to embarrass. But on the other hand, you know, if there's a child really struggling with something, we need to know about it. And your call just adds a real good note that I think a lot of parents really need to hear. Thanks, Tanya. Let's go to Stephen calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Stephen, welcome.
How you doing, Dr. Mueller?
I'm doing great. Glad to hear from you.
I just wanted to call and just comment to any parents that are listening. I grew up with Christian parents. I accepted Christ when I was 10 years old. But still, in my teenage years, my parents, for whatever reason, just allowed a lot of freedoms at home with friends when friends were over, and as far as going out on weekends, that at the time I thought was cool or whatever. But looking back now, and not even now, I'm 27, even in my later teen years and early 20s, I could look back and say, you know, I wish that y'all had exercised more restraint, because if you had, I may not have made some of the decisions then that I regret now having made, and it wouldn't have been a matter of, well, you must not have loved me. If you watched me more closely, I think I could appreciate more now the fact that if they had held a tighter rein over what I called my freedom then I wouldn't have some of the things on a list of things that I regret.
You know, Stephen, there may be a parent, a mom or a dad out there whose entire perspective could be turned around just by what you had to say. And I really like the way you flipped the question, went back to the perspective of the young person, of the child, and said, look, and now as an adult, I can look back and know that had my parents been a little less concerned about this zone of privacy, they'd give me a little less freedom, I would be a lot healthier and I could have avoided some of these things. You know, I think this is the reality that many parents face. We want to be the good guy, and we come to know our children, and especially during adolescence, we come to know them in a very different way. They begin to become critical thinkers. They develop a completely different personality in terms of humor and enjoyment and all the rest in conversation. And I think there are a lot of parents who kind of think that what they want to be is their kid's friend, when in reality, teenage children need just as much parenting as younger children, sometimes more. And they need sometimes even more confrontation. And the cost of that confrontation gets higher, doesn't it? I mean, when you correct your three-year-old, the three-year-old doesn't usually come back and brood about it and think about it for 3 months. A 17-year-old might, in a very different context. But that's a risk we as parents have to take. And that risk has to be based in true knowledge of what's going on. And that's what really brings up this whole idea of a zone of privacy. Let's go to Lori. She's calling from Tampa, Florida, listening to WTBN. Lori, make sense out of all this.
Well, if you ask my opinion, I think children don't have rights to privacy. And one of the things that crossed my mind, and I have four children that God gave me through adoption, and I had the privilege of raising into adulthood, and that if you question a parent that is at the graveside of their child who died in an auto accident, alcohol-related, speed-related, a child that died from drugs, they would give anything to have the opportunity to maybe go back and use the tools that are available now and find out what their kids are doing.
Yeah, and I think that kind of perspective also adds some gravity to what we're talking about. Thanks for your call, Lori. I really do appreciate it. You know, folks, there used to be something in the pre-technological age that really was pretty good about monitoring kids. And that was the family and the mother network and the kind of thing that went on in a community where everybody saw everybody. When I was a kid, and, you know, I think the golden age of boyhood in a lot of ways is like between like 10 and 13. When you're young enough, you're still a kid, but you're old enough. You can ride your bike, hang around with your friends, go out in the woods and all the rest. But you know what? I couldn't have gotten away with anything. I mean, not really, because somebody's mom would have known about it. And if anybody's mom knew about it, then my mom would have known about it. My mom knew about it. My dad would have known about it. And life as I knew it was over. I mean, that's basically the way it worked. But nowadays, we live in a very different society. We have kids that have incredible opportunity, incredible access, and all this kind of time on their hands. And it gives them all kinds of new opportunities to get into trouble. And I think that's what's really dangerous. I think that's the kind of thing we really need to watch. We're living in a world in which the opportunities are often outpacing our thinking about how we need to protect our children. And the new technologies that are coming around with the kind of GPS systems, the tracking systems, the reporting systems, and all the rest, well, those things may be helpful, but I think they're absolutely irrelevant if the parent doesn't intend, first of all, to use that information to help that child to make the kind of responsible decisions and to grow into the kind of responsible, mature Christian character that the true Christian man, the true Christian woman must demonstrate. We must have a goal in mind, and then we have to be absolutely committed to do whatever it takes to get from here to there. That's what makes parenthood such a struggle. That's what makes parenthood so difficult. That's what makes parenthood, in a Christian sense, so exhilarating. I'll be right back with some final thoughts on the matter from Louisville, Kentucky. This is the Albert Mohler Program. Well, you know, it's one thing to talk about a zone of privacy that is geographic, it's physical, the room, or it's electronic, the internet, or the phone, or whatever. What about the zone of privacy that zeroes in on the kid's heart? I think that's what's really interesting. You know, the hands-off attitude really isn't all that new. For some time now, even for the last 200 or 250 years, there have been experts who said to parents, you should not try to influence the heart of your children. You should not try, if you're Christians, to force them, that's the language used, to come to a Christian conviction. And you should not invade their heart. And by the way, of course, faith isn't something that can be forced. It is something that certainly can be encouraged. I want you to hear the words of Robert L. Dabney. He was one of the main preachers, a very influential pastor from the 19th century. He said this, and I quote, "The parent has power to invade the sacred liberty of the child's soul. It is made both his privilege and his duty to impose the principles and the creed which he has sincerely adopted as the truth for himself upon the spirit of the child. Some men, it is known, vainly pray to the supposed obligation to leave the minds of their children independent and unbiased until they are mature enough to choose for themselves. But a moment's thought shows this unlawful and impossible. One thing is certain, this young and plastic soul will take impress from somewhere, if not from the appointed and heaven-ordained hand of his parent, then from some other irresponsible hand, of man or evil angel. One might as well speak of immersing an open vessel in the ocean and having it remain empty as of having a youthful soul to grow up in society unbiased until it is qualified to elect its own creed most wisely. I think that's a really insightful passage from a pastor who's demonstrating some true biblical wisdom. Someone is watching our children. Someone is influencing our children. Someone is reaching their souls. Someone is reaching their hearts. Ladies and gentlemen, parents out there, let's make sure that we are reaching our children and that we know who else is reaching our children. Let's protect their hearts, protect their eyes, protect their ears. Yes, I know that's politically incorrect. Yes, I know that means that we should be the censors, yes, of what our children read. We should be the censors of what they see on the Internet. We should be their protectors. We should make the decisions about what they see in the movie, cinema, or what they do not see. We should be the ones who make the big decisions until they are truly mature enough to make the right decisions. Yes, there comes a point when we lose control. There comes a point when they reach the age of maturity. But until then, we're the ones who will give an answer. And until then, let's encourage each other to be faithful. Let's think these issues through and let's talk to each other about it. Folks, this is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. And tomorrow, it's Ask Anything Wednesday, when you get to set the agenda. And tomorrow, we'll talk about whatever's on your mind. Culture, politics, Bible, you name it. I'll meet you there.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.